Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the late 90s and 2000s. I am one of your hosts, Marco Poupard.
And I'm your other host, Emily Bajan.
As Waka Flocka Flame once said, I am going to freestyle off the dome today because I am coming to you, no notes, nothing ready. I have been at an offsite for the last 3 days for work and my brain is dead. So Emily and I decided that we're going to do, let's just say, like a companion episode to our asteroid movies. Not because we're going to like talk about asteroids or talk about the Bug's Life versus Ants box office feud of 1998 as well. No, it's
no one
we're going
needs
in
to
more
do that.
Of like a musical direction because we had such a great time blasting Aerosmith last week to the chagrin of everyone around us and to the concern of our loved ones.
Yes.
But we thought what would be fun to talk about today is some iconic soundtracks from movies of a bygone era. I feel like soundtracks are a art form lost to time, much
True.
Like burned mix CDs that you make for your friends.
Yep.
And a good soundtrack has a combination of elements. Like, I think Barbie might be like the closest one.
Yes.
But like the sheer joy of getting a soundtrack, a physical media soundtrack, is that there were always like little things like in the jacket, in the liner notes.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they would have like the interludes in between songs have like clips from the movie.
Oh my God.
Like,
oh my God.
Famously, that Jerry Maguire.
Yes. Oh, that version of
Fire
Secret
song?
Garden.
Yeah, Secret Garden.
Oh. Yeah, where she's like, you had me at hello.
Yes. And that was played. That was played on the radio.
There was like
a 5-minute speech on Kiss FM.
Remember, because one, growing up, my dad had a bunch of burned CDs from his friends, including Bruce Springsteen's Greatest Hits. And that version, I'm pretty sure, was on the Greatest Hits, Springsteen's Greatest Hits. And I remember this version.
That is very bizarre.
I know.
Was it really that? Like,
was
it successful? Like, was it successful chart-wise?
I think it was. I think like Springsteen's songs in the 90s, like he was a huge hit in like the 70s and 80s. In the 90s, it really was soundtracks because it's like Philadelphia, which is very sad. And Streets of Philadelphia. And then Secret Garden from Jerry Maguire. I feel like those are his big, he had maybe another hit or two in the 90s, but really those were like the major ones. I think that's when he crossed over to Nostalgia Act, which I don't care because I love Springsteen, but the 90s were much more a soundtrack. He was like the Kenny Loggins of the 90s, maybe.
No, that's so – I mean, you make a great point, which is like having soundtracks was a good way for artists to release singles before streaming when you could just put a single up. Like, I mean, look at, I don't know, any contemporary artist now just has like a shitload of singles that don't belong to any single album and are just right. like out there floating around cool. because they're just out there testing the audience versus, you know, before you could release a single as part of like a soundtrack the way that like Aerosmith yeah. did, and it blew up yeah. so much that they had to include it on a regular physical release. So yeah, we're talking about some iconic soundtracks today is what we're really trying to say.
Very excited. One minor note on what you just said. I'm remembering one of my favorite queens in the world, Sade, has not released new music in like over 10 years, except she had a song, I think, on the Wrinkle in Time soundtrack or whatever. Right. I think like Disney released a movie adaptation a few years ago. And that is really a great way for an artist who's just like, I don't have it in me to make a whole album, to just like show up. Do a quick song, maybe get an Oscar nomination out of it. And, you know,
look at Rihanna. She just
look at
did
Rihanna
that for the Black yeah. Panther soundtrack yeah. last year. Yeah. And everybody was hyped. They're like, oh, yeah, like it's going to be great.
We did
and
a
it's
whole
like
episode.
It's a fucking ballad. Everyone's like, oh,
no.
Okay.
No, Riri.
Lift me up. Got it. Cool. Sounds great. I'll put my sparkly pants away now. But I mean, if you want to feel like Sade is still currently releasing music, you need to go to the nail salon that I go to. Because they play nonstop track after track Sade, like truly. If you want to, yeah,
to hear
listen
it.
To Fairest Time, like you can just go to Nails on Grand and just hear hit after hit because to them, Sade is still a contemporary artist.
You know, according to my Wrapped a few years ago, she certainly also, was for me too.
Also correct for you as well. Yeah. who could have seen that one coming? Steely Dan's number one fan on Spotify. Okay, so some of the soundtracks, because Emily so graciously put together a list, and I, you know, contrary to what you may think, I had nothing to add because I owned most, if not all, of these.
Yeah.
And so I think we're just going to like kind of in a roundabout way talk about Freaky Friday, which you recently won at yes. a Freaky Friday screening.
Yes. Well, so part of the reason I thought about this, we thought about this idea for this season in general, was because we were jamming out to the Freaky Friday soundtrack in my car because I'd won it at a screening that we went to with our friends Todd and Zoe. And the next day we had a pool hangout where we all met up at a pool. Unfortunately, our day was a little dampened by some children jumping in the pool, but most of the day was wonderful. And our drive there.
Don't cut it down. That was really good people watching, even
though
it was
fantastic.
It was disgusting at times. But that Renaissance painting photo that I took of the old guy who looks like the guy from Jurassic Park and that weird teen with a towel wrapped around their waist. And it was just absolute chaos. But I do love that picture.
Friends, you may remember that sometimes in middle school, there's always one boy in your class who's like an old man at 12. We located one of those kids. He was at the pool that day, and that is the aforementioned waist towel kid that was in Margot's Renaissance painting photo.
Oh, we should put that up on the Instagram as like part of the image, like the promo image or whatever. You can just swipe to see.
But yes, we were jamming out to the Freaky Friday soundtrack on an actual CD that's currently in my car, and it still slaps. It's great.
It's currently in Emily's car because she also cannot get it out. So no, there's also
true.
That.
That's true.
But what is CD to sell your car with when you do eventually sell your car?
If it's sold as a whole car and not parts, yes, I would firmly agree.
Well, even if they sell it for parts, they're going to get that part of your car as well, which is the Freaky Friday soundtrack.
It's a real treat.
I mean, the ultimate is really just a classic good song, because when you and I were working on this script idea, you and I went back and revisited the Josie and the Pussycat Strand
yes.
track and the ultimate, that song in particular, because we were both so like, this is the kind of music you need to have a catchy
yes.
single
yes.
from a movie, even if it's like a fake song from a movie. Like, what are good fake songs from movies? And the ultimate is one of them.
There's a couple on this CD too, because I'm looking at the track listing, and you have
for
the
Freaky Friday.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and Take Me Away. It's by Christina Vidal, who's the lead singer of the band, of the fictional band. But that's like the main song I think they sing at House of Blues at their audition.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great one. A lot of good covers on this soundtrack. So you've got like a cover of Happy Together by Simple Plan, What I Like About You by Lilix. What else? Oh, you have the Baby One More Time cover by Bowling for Soup. With
and
the intro.
Chad Michael Murray, hello.
With the intro, which again, a great example of like a movie intro, like in, as an interlude to a song.
Oh, and they also have the Donnas on here, which
yeah.
is... yeah, I think a sadly, like maybe forgotten band a bit, because whenever I bring it up, most people are like, who? I'm like, I fucking loved the Donnas.
They were such a 90s teen movie soundtrack staple because yes. they show up in Drive Me Crazy, Jawbreaker, and at least one or two other movies. But they had, I mean, and in both those movies, they played they were the prom band.
Mm-hmm. Well,
amazing.
Speaking of good prom bands, I mean, as we go down this list, we also have 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh,
we're
yeah.
We're going to talk about Pulp Fiction, which was also a great iconic soundtrack that really, I think, like numbers-wise did really well as well.
Yeah.
The Parent Trap.
Yeah.
Bodyguard. Charlie's Angels, also classic. Legally Blonde. Princess Diaries. Coyote Ugly, which I have a great story about. Can't Stop the Moonlight and Baby One More Time mashup. So when we get to, speaking of, so when we get to it, we'll get to it. Josie and the Pussycats, Save the Last Dance, Center Stage,
oh yeah,
Juno, My Best Friend's Wedding, Clueless, Empire Records, Bring It On, and Cruel Intentions. Maybe we'll get to all of them specifically, but we will call it out as best we can. We're not going to like unpack each one like track by track or anything like that.
No. But yeah, let's get into it. So I have a question for you, Margot, though. What was the first soundtrack you remember listening to or first buying?
I really think it was Clueless because I was so obsessed with that movie when I was younger. And so I think it's definitely that was the one that I had. Because when I think about like first albums or like CDs I owned, like it was Wham. I remember that. I had a Wham tape, a RuPaul single, and like a B-52s tape. So those are like some of the first things that I remember. But I think in terms of like soundtrack that I like blasted intentionally in my room, it was definitely like Clueless.
I love that.
What about you?
So it might have been Clueless or The Parent Trap, to be honest, which was had some classic. It's a very Nancy Meyers soundtrack. So it's got, you know, you've got your Nat King Cole, but you also have some really great, you know, songs on there, get good vibes. In some ways, I don't know if it was really meant for kids because there's only like one or two kind of teeny bopper songs on the soundtrack, but I was obsessed with all things Parent Trap, so I had to have it. That was fun, though. There was like a, I like to this day, I blast that soundtrack, but more for like dinner parties.
Yeah, it is actually like, I mean, this is peak, what's that playlist? Like a Coastal Grandmother or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Coastal Grandmother for sure, for sure.
It's peak this. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. You've got like Linda Ronstadt. You've got, like you said, Natalie Cole and Dusty Springfield.
Yeah.
The Beatles, The Laws. I mean, there's some, when you think about hearing older or like music that's not necessarily marketed to kids, I think a lot of it, a lot of the bands that I heard that wasn't something that my parents necessarily listened to always came from a soundtrack from a movie.
Totally. And actually, you bring up a good point, which is going to come up at one point in our notes, which is that like you, the first time you hear a lot of oldies, if you're, you know, of a young age when you're listening to certain soundtracks, is going to be on a soundtrack. It may not be because you, to your point, grew up with it. If that wasn't the music your parents listened to. Yeah, that was, for me, so much so on this Parent Trap album. Let's see. So we talked about the first ones that we remember buying. Do you remember? Obviously, we just talked about how these are probably some favorites, but are there any others that are like particular standouts for you from this list?
I mean, so the Pulp Fiction soundtrack was not something that I necessarily like owned per se. Like it was like the family soundtrack. And I would say the same for the Bodyguard. But Charlie's Angels, I really, I mean, mm-hmm. it had like Destiny's Child on it. I think it had like a little bit of everything that you love. So it had like music that was like geared for me, a middle schooler with Destiny's Child, but also had, what's that boat song? Like,
Brandy, you're a fine girl. Yeah.
Which like I absolutely, I really enjoyed that song quite
yacht
a bit.
Yacht rock staple.
And I would also say, I mean, along like the, I wouldn't say yacht rock train, but like Center Stage and Save the Last Dance, like as somebody who was actively dancing while those soundtracks were popular, like every fucking audition I went to and also participated in it. I'm not trying to act like I'm above it because I fully did an audition to Red Hot Chili Peppers' Higher Ground because I was so obsessed with Center Stage. But every dance audition from like 1999 to 2004, somebody picked a song from either the Save the Last Dance soundtrack or from the Center Stage soundtrack.
Absolutely. So because, you know, I had a little sister, we shared our CD collection. So if I didn't have it, she had it. And I'm pretty sure she had both of these, but I listened to them all the time, Save the Last Dance and Center Stage. And in particular, Center Stage was just like such, oh my God, like such a good soundtrack. And lately, I have been listening to Save the Last Dance, a little like early 2000s R&B hip hop.
It's so good.
So, so good. Like, I'd argue, you know, I mean, after we revisited Save the Last Dance, I got to say the soundtrack is better than the movie. Like, you
have I could agree with that. I totally co-sign it. As somebody who was influenced by this movie to leave ballet and do something different, I can safely say that the soundtrack beats the movie. I mean, the movie in a lot of ways, like we talked about on the episode about Save the Last Dance, like it does the terrible thing of like a fear and grief based like change in your life. Like, like, you know, her losing her mom and like having a lot of regret about that and like getting a second chance and not knowing what to do with it. I don't know. Obviously we've seen that done better. And it also follows that Disney trope of like, let's just murder the mom. So she like has something to go through.
Yeah, that's her challenge. the other one that you mentioned earlier, which is a favorite for me, is Charlie's Angels for sure. Mm-hmm. That's another great one. Another one where there's like that movie interlude with Tom Green before Brandy. He does the sailors say Brand. Like you get. Anyway, yes. Great.
I also think that because Mick G, who directed Charlie's Angels, had such a big music video background. I think that obviously some of these soundtracks, you look through it and it's like some of these directors have very specific ideas
for
let's say like needle drops or specific music tastes. And I think about Quentin Tarantino and how I wouldn't have ever listened to some of the music on my own had it not been for like Jackie. I would also say like Jackie Brown soundtrack.
Jackie Brown's too. Great. Yeah.
But same goes for Pulp Fiction because he could pull listened to. Yeah. Surf rock or even old school R&B as well.
Yeah, I this album for me, Pulp Fiction, was another one that my dad burned off of someone else. And I stole it and listened to it all the time because I don't know. I really was digging the surf rock at the time. But still a great soundtrack. The other one I would say on this list that's a favorite for me is Coyote Ugly, which I know you have a story for. So let's maybe get into that. But like for me, this album, my sister owned it as well, but it had like five Leanne Rimes songs and then a bunch of really good dance throwbacks.
Well, so, I mean, the story, it's not necessarily a story. It was just we're out to dinner with some friends and can't find the Moonlight, like came on at the restaurant.
No.
And one of our friends was like, oh, doesn't this song sound a little bit like Hit Me Baby One More Time? Because it's that interlude where she's like, can't fight the moonlight. And like, it can kind of, it almost sounds like, I'm not that innocent. And so we were having a lively table debate about whether or not you could do like a mashup between Can't Fight the Moonlight and Baby One More Time. And I have to say, I do hear it. It does make sense to me. So I will actually just want your perspective as, you know, another music aficionado, if that tracks for you or if you think it's a reach.
No, I think it's specifically with Baby One More Time, I think it's not a reach because they have a very similar drum machine in the background. Like their percussion is almost identical. It's about the same RPM, I would say. Like it's not RPM or BPM. Like it's about the same tempo. And I would say the only difference really is that musically, obviously, the Can't Fight the Moonlight's a much more challenging song. There's like three key changes in it. And it's just, but ultimately, I could see that mashup working out really well. So someone out there, mashup DJ, do your thing.
Yeah, girl talk. Do it.
make it happen.
That's my Coyote Ugly tidbit.
I have another question for you, which is, in the midst of buying all these soundtracks, was there one where you bought it strictly for one song and then the rest of it was like a kind of a bummer? And it may not even be on this list. So like, are there any that come to mind where you like, I have to get this for this one song, and then the rest of it was just kind of like, eh?
I'm sure there is one, but nothing's coming to mind. Do you have one?
Not really. I mean, I think if I remember correctly, I owned the Rugrats soundtrack at one point, the Rugrats movie soundtrack. And the other songs were okay. There were like one or two okay ones. But I think it was definitely meant for like Gen X adults with children, because there were a lot of like Elvis Costello and other musicians on there. But I bought it mostly because of the Take Me There song with Maya and Case. And like, I forget who else is on that track. Maybe Blackstreet. I don't want to get it confused with the lineup on Ghetto Superstar, because they both came out around the same time and had,
oh, sure.
I think there's a bit more overlap than just Maya on those songs, but yeah. In terms of other soundtracks, like, you know, we were just talking about Barbie. Why do you think soundtracks were so important in the 90s and 2000s? Just like, you know, Barbie being an exception, but really the last 10 years, I wouldn't say there have been that many soundtracks apart from like scores. You know, people still really love listening to scores when they, you know, work or study. But like,
I was just about to say that, because I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like people love the Succession score. People love the White Lotus score.
Hans Zimmer is rolling in the dough. Like,
although when I tried to work to the White Lotus score, I truly started to have a panic attack. I was just like,
it's too much.
I feel very anxious all of a sudden.
Yeah, could not do it.
I think I don't really know what happened in the last 10 or 15 years, other than I do know that, I mean, the move to streaming obviously has like changed a lot of the movie industry and obviously the music industry as well. And I think so many of the changes across both have made it kind of maybe complicated. And I'm sure it has something to do with residuals. I'm sure it has to do with studios and having to get along with possibly just like in-house artists versus you can't just like pick whoever. And then also this trend of musicians specifically selling their catalogs for large sums of money. I can't help but think that that has to fucking play a role in it. Yeah. And I also think that I would also say that like the other good soundtrack that came out of a movie recently was the first Black Panther soundtrack. That was all Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
And you could even make a case, even though I hated all of the original songs or the new original songs, you could also say that The Lion King with Beyonce and Donald Glover was also very good. But these are all truly like singular artists or two artists who have a unified vision overseeing the arc of a soundtrack. And I guess you could also say James Gunn has like a very particular point of view. And I would also point to like at least the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 had a pretty successful soundtrack. But that's because they made an effort in the movie to kind of have this mixtape tie-in with Chris Pratt's character, like having that mixtape from his mom who's dead now, blah, blah, blah. So like those are like a couple of instances I can think of. But it seems like maybe I think stuff is like so awards driven that most people like don't want to do it unless it's going to win an award, like Gaga with A Star Is Born.
Totally. You just brought up something that I hadn't even thought about. So you mentioned like Succession and White Lotus earlier. And while they're praised for their scores, I would also add that a lot of those HBO miniseries and TV shows are kind of the holdouts in terms of like soundtracks people are still jamming. Like when Big Little Lies was first released, I remember that soundtrack was really big. Like people really liked to listen to it. And it wasn't just like the score, but like the actual soundtrack of the songs they were playing throughout the scenes. But those to me have been kind of the exceptions in the last, you know, 10 years, besides the ones you brought up for movies and such. But like, yeah, it's interesting. I think you're absolutely right. Like streaming kind of killed the game of the movie industry, and similarly kind of any companion pieces to a movie have kind of gone away. I mean, people are just not buying physical media anymore. And to your
point.
Well,
we both know that's not true because we look at vinyl sales.
Yes.
And that is like insanely popular. Like as somebody who is waiting on their vinyl pre-order of the That Thing You Do soundtrack. Like,
oh, I need to order vinyl, that.
Like it is still popular. You bought me so nicely the Josie and the Pussycat soundtrack on vinyl too. Like there are ways to do it, but also manufacturing vinyl is expensive. It takes a long time. It only kind of makes sense if you pre-order it because you don't want to make a bunch of vinyl records and then just have them fucking sitting around because you lose money. People are really scared to spend money. And by people, I mean studios. They're terrified to spend money on anything that's not like an absolute 150% chance of $1 million profit. And
totally.
I think that has something to do with it. But also it has to do with like rights, like because I'm thinking about when we rewatched The Hills, how they took out all of the music.
I was
going like to
bring
huge,
that up.
Yep, a huge, huge part of the show and like why we loved it and why it's such a great contemporary piece of pop culture. But because of streaming rights and complicated music royalties, they had to take out all of the music. And now they use like Selling Sunsets, like, ooh, sell that house.
Oh, my God.
Like,
but there is like, so I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to talk about that too. So when I was looking at the Freaky Friday soundtrack on Spotify just now, there
are like some of them are grayed out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's because, you know, a lot of these, you know, when these albums were released, there were a lot more record labels in the game and now everybody's owned by someone else. There's really only three major record labels out there. I think it's Universal, it's Warner and Sony. That's it. And so, you know, it becomes when you are kind of these giant conglomerates, you're less likely to clear it for something small potatoes as like the streaming rights to this one cover song by this two hit band from this 2004 soundtrack because it's just not worth the time.
Totally. And I used to know somebody who worked in music clearing and it's a more complicated process, I think, than we all realize. Or like a more lengthy process. Maybe not complicated, but like lengthy. And
to
your point, like if they just want to get it out and like make money, what is their incentive, like monetary incentive to not do that?
Yeah.
Because it's a shame. There's no more. There are no kind of great movie tie-ins anymore.
It was a fun aspect. Like I was thinking, so you're bringing up like the original, those soundtracks where it's like an artist composes like an entire original soundtrack. And there are a couple of instances of that throughout the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, like very famously, like Prince in 1989 for the Tim Burton Batman movie did a whole soundtrack. And then I'm like blanking on someone from the 90s, but I know there's at least a few. Like I think Peter Gabriel did one for like The Last Temptation of Christ. That might have also been an 80s movie, but like
The Tarzan soundtrack wasn't
that Towns, Phil Collins. Yeah,
Phil
it's
Collins.
90s. Yeah, yeah.
All the time. Sorry.
But both Genesis, I mean, they're both members of Genesis, so it's
And they both kind of like seem like similar-y assholes.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
80s musicians that had a world music, you know, tie in at one point or another.
Yes, yeah, what she said.
But yeah, you're like, that was, it was a really big deal. And like, it's so interesting. The other thing is like children's soundtracks. I mean, now it's gone so Broadway. And it was a little like that in the 90s, but I feel like you had a lot more, it was much more rock focused with like the kids movie soundtracks. Like now, there is nary a kid's movie where a Disney movie where Lin-Manuel Miranda has not put his hand or stamp on.
Yeah, totally. Because I was also just thinking of like the last like super popular soundtrack was for Hamilton, stage production.
Yeah.
So that should tell you everything.
Truly. In terms of other kind of questions I wanted to ask you. So you brought up That Thing You Do, and we talked about Josie and the Pussycats. And I think we obviously want to maybe talk about this in a future episode potentially, but just very quickly, you know, a lot of soundtracks that we loved in this time centered around fictional bands. Are there any particular standouts we should talk about or talk about a bit further?
Other bands or other songs from the soundtracks?
Yeah, from soundtracks. So it could be like a whole album was done by the fictional band, or there were like a couple of fictional band songs on that soundtrack.
Yeah, well, they have Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters on. They have that song on the soundtrack, and that's a fake band within a fake band movie, which is kind of interesting. And same with
Du Jour.
Thank you. I was like, say no more. Like, you're not remembering their name. But
which...
What?
Which, well, that's not on the Empire Records soundtrack. I wish it was. Rex Manning, Say No More.
He's not. That does suck. It's too bad.
It's too bad. But yeah, Du Jour. I mean, a bunch of these songs were written by the late Adam Schlesinger. Like,
oh, right.
That Thing You Do, Pretend to Be Nice on Josie and the Pussycats. I think he wrote a few of the Du Jour songs on that album. Like,
I believe he did. Because another great... aspect of like having physical media, when you open up the Josie and the Pussycats like trifold, like inside the vinyl, there's a whole story about how they wrote a lot of these songs.
Yeah,
I do think one of the screenwriters from Josie and the Pussycats wrote part of a Du Jour song like in the back of a cab or whatever, and the story is inside the little booklet. And so
are
like kind of like, this is the context that you lose when everything is just like in a cloud.
You just made me remember that it's Deborah Kaplan and Harry Elfont who directed Josie and the Pussycats, who also did Can't Hardly Wait, and also I think had a background in music videos, which makes a lot of sense because both movies, I mean, one's about a fictional band or a couple of fictional bands, the other is about a house party, but both have killer soundtracks.
Well, you could also say it's about Ethan Embry's love of Barry Manilow.
Oh, yeah.
The soundtrack is so good. When we were driving back from a writer's retreat where we ended up watching Can't Hardly Wait, I downloaded the soundtrack so we could listen to it in the car.
I absolutely love it.
Because it has everything. It has The Replacements. It has it have the fake band from The House Party with Donald Faison?
Oh, Loveburger.
Thank you.
I'm looking it up right now. I'm looking it up just because I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pulling it up right now. It looks like they don't, which is a real disappointment. And it's very sad. If they do a re-release of this soundtrack on vinyl, I hope they do. But Graduate from Third Eye Blind's on here too.
Well, so is Ode by Creed.
Oh my God. So there are a dud here and there, but Damn It by Blink-182. Oh man, this is great. This is real. Hit him with that heat. Oh my God. And again, like some throwbacks. So you have It's Tricky by Run-DMC and Flashlight by Parliament. Like,
I would say that It's Tricky, the first time I heard it was in Can't Hardly Wait.
Me too. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great example of that. And then I think the first time I ever heard Can't Hardly Wait by The Replacements. Like, this might be the first time I ever heard The Replacements. And I love The Replacements now. But yeah. Wild. Amazing. But yeah, again, like two directors, a pair of directors who did a really good job on the soundtrack front, who had really good companion pieces to their films. I'm trying to think if there are any other fictional bands in the list we had, posted here. Like, I mean, it's not a fictional band, but in Juno, you do have like the cover of Elliot Page and Michael Cera's version of Anybody Else But You, that like part-time lover, full-time friend song. Mm-hmm. And then otherwise, oh, in My Best Friend's Wedding, it's not a fictional band, but it is like they do have Rupert Everett's version of I Say a Little Prayer for You. I had this on my list, and it's just because like I remember listening to it every once in a while. There were like really good modern covers of Burt Bacharach songs. Apparently I was like a mom at 10 years old.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that this was an iconic soundtrack necessarily, but
no.
Austin Powers had like a Burt Bacharach cameo. And because of that is the only reason I had any awareness of who Burt Bacharach was when I was like however old, 9.
I had the Austin Powers soundtrack, and that had a lot of film interludes as well. And I think like Austin Powers' fictional band may have had a song on the original Austin Powers soundtrack, but it's been so long, I couldn't tell you. Yeah, what a fun. Oh, this is like, I'm going to be listening to more soundtracks after this. Are there any soundtracks that are significantly better than the movie they supported? We talked about Save the Last Dance. Are there any else on this list that you are like, yeah, movie so-so, killer soundtrack though?
No, not really. I mean, I really like all of the movies that we have listed here. I mean, I could see how some people don't necessarily love Empire Records, the movie, but could respect the soundtrack because it is kind of like a weird movie, right? Like, it is a little campy. Like, I feel like you can't. The first time I watched it, I was probably too young to even understand what's happening, but I definitely was like, are all these people like for real, or are they just like kind of like being a little dramatic? Like, I couldn't tell. Maybe it's because of like the save the bell, like I'm so excited, I'm so scared, that I was like, is like Liv Tyler like really serious about her like pillow problem, or is that
it
kind
was
of, like,
a Jesse
drama?
Spano
yes, and I couldn't
giving
really
Jesse
like,
Spano
could not get a beat on it. So I would say that like the first time I watched it, I definitely thought it was camp, like,
yeah,
or, you know, didn't know that that was the word, but that was how I felt about it.
I think it hits for me to this day. I still watch Empire Records once a year on Rex Manning Day. And I think it's because I watched it at 14, 15 years old, the probably absolute perfect age to have seen this film. And I can see how ridiculous there are this many scenes are in this movie. But yeah, I would agree. Like, if I'm looking at the movie Empire Records objectively, it is not a fantastic film. It has a fantastic cast and a lot of very funny moments and a killer soundtrack. But I would say I think the soundtrack might technically be better than the film. And it's really hard for me to say that. I'm saying it as a film critic with a film critic lens and not the 14, 15 year old that still lives inside me lens.
Yeah, I think that it is interesting to revisit these to be like, or at least revisit some of these movies and be like, well, was it like a really good movie, or was I just 10 when I saw it and I really enjoyed it? But I do think that, like, I would say to go the reverse way, I don't know if the Princess Diaries soundtrack lives up to how good the movie is.
Yeah, I would agree. There's like two, three really good songs. I had that soundtrack. It's that Miracles Happen song that's still a banger. And there was also there was like a song by this girl named a one name singer named Crystal that I guess the Backstreet Boys had started their own label at the time, which, like, remember when people could do that? I mean, nowadays it's like more independent artists will do that. But like this boy band was like, we're going to start our own label. So they signed this girl and she had this song. I don't know if she ever released another song. I don't know if she's even
Myra?
On Spotify. Her name is Crystal. So there's Mira, who did Miracles Happen and had a couple of other Disney soundtracks, I think. But yeah,
the only Christy song I'm seeing is Christy Carlson Romano.
Oh my god, then I don't even know. Maybe this song didn't even make it on the soundtrack. I could have sworn it was on here. This is like, this is very sad. Princess Diaries soundtrack. Yeah, I guess it's not even on here. Oh wow. Well, anyway, there was like that and then Mandy Moore's cover of Stupid Cupid. But yeah, I wouldn't say it was like the most fantastic soundtrack. Unfortunately, it's missing on Spotify a few of the songs because of all the label drama. But yeah, I would say the movie is better than the soundtrack. Trying to see if there are any other ones here where I feel that way as well. Like, I mean, if for me, most of these are kind of head to head with the movie they supported or are better than the movie. Yeah, like I was rewatching The Bodyguard on a flight the other day. And, you know, actually what's an interesting thing is like sometimes it's the soundtrack that makes the movie. Like the movie itself, The Bodyguard, is fine. But like the killer Diane Warren penned Whitney Houston tracks are like what make the movie the movie. I feel like there's a couple of these movies here too, where it's just like, it's a good movie, but I think the soundtrack addition in the film is like what carries the plot in many ways. I think Tarantino does a good job with that. Like,
totally.
He's very good at like really inserting a song in the right place to help further the plot or kind of define the mood. And I know that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was kind of a drag for a lot of people because it's 3 hours long. But I liked what he did where he had the LA radio station on pretty much the entire time in the background of this film. It like gave it a real mood. It was like, I think it was KHJ Los Angeles, and like had the old call signs and everything, which was kind of cool. So yeah, fun times. Is there anything from the soundtracks era that you'd like to see make a comeback besides like just soundtracks in general? Is there anything else that you're like, we need this in 2023 or 2024?
I need blockbusters to have a blockbuster single attached.
Yeah.
Like I need yes! these. Sorry to
Original
bring it
song.
Back. Yeah. I'm sorry to bring it back, but not for necessarily for the purpose of winning a fucking Oscar. Just do
no.
it because it's,
no,
it's the right
no.
thing to do. Do it no. that way. But because I want I want an Aerosmith level can't miss
yes.
a thing song to go with like Ambulance Ants or something. Ambulance didn't have
no,
a banger song.
I agree.
Like, I really can't think of the last time a banger song preceded the popularity of a movie. I want like that level again. Like,
I know.
Like get someone on it. I think it's a really tough nut to crack though. I think it's definitely easier said than done, but I do believe that someone can do it.
It was such a big deal. I feel like until 15, 10 years ago, almost every movie that was like even a superhero movie or an action movie would have a song. Like Kiss by a Rose from the Grave like is still a banger. I don't care what you say. It's like not you, but the people out there. It's a great song. Even I
not
don't
me,
like,
you, like collective you.
Collectively. And even I don't like Nickelback, but listen, that hero song from the Spider-Man soundtrack was very like, it was a perfect song to put in that movie. I don't know. Like it's a perfect like 2000, like, I don't know. It's not, I see your face. It's
I don't
not
know, I can walk with you
song.
On. I can't walk with you on that one, but I support the point you're trying to make.
The
because
point
I
I'm trying
support
to make
women.
It, yeah.
Their rights and their wrongs.
And they're wrongs. I can be a flawed character too.
Yes, you contain multitudes, etc. But yeah,
Michael
no, Bay. I know what you mean. Like, but then that also begs the question of like, who's like a big arena rock band that could do that? Like Metallica? Like, I mean, what the fuck? I'm not saying that
just,
from like a place of knowledge at
no,
all.
No,
like,
I'm thinking,
but
about
I'm trying
it.
To think of like the last big rock band that everybody knows, not some like random fucking TikTok
no,
thing,
but
like a real, not a real, but like a big band that like could sell out Chase or Levi's.
Multiple I think
bands, like
Foo
Rolling
Fighters. I think it's on Foo Fighters. Like
Rolling
that.
Stone just like put, they, the Rolling Stones just put out like a new album. Maybe they could do
yeah.
it.
Dude. Yeah. I like the Stones could probably do it. I think the Foo Fighters could do it. I think, yeah, they're really the great rock bands, if you will. Like, it's just not as much of a thing anymore. It's all either, it's a nostalgia act at this point, or it's like a very, you know, niche kind of band. There are not like these huge
well, so
bands.
I think the problem is that it needs to be both. It needs to be a giant band and it needs to be a good song, because you're talking about like reunion act, some like nostalgia stuff. I'm just thinking about that NSYNC single that just came out for the Trolls 2 movie and landed with a fucking thud. I mean, like, everybody listened to that song exactly one time, went okay, and then moved on, because first of all,
it's Justin Timberlake.
No, it's not even that, Emily. It's Trolls 2, which, like, the millennial people that NSYNCers are catering to, sure, some of them have kids, but they don't care about including their kids in NSYNC nostalgia. We want like a reunion tour, to be fair. And if you're going to do like a big single, like, it better be for like whatever, some Scarlett Johansson like blockbuster rom-com. I don't know. I'm just saying A-list words, but like, it doesn't have to be her, but it needs to be something like that. You know what I mean? And the song was also not good. Sorry, it was not a good song. Yeah. So it needs to be all three. Like, you need to get Max Martin back in here. You need to literally perform whatever fucking voodoo you did in 1999, replicate all of the exact same energy, and then also tie it to like a good movie. Or it needs to be like Michael Bay, like Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm again listing the actors that were in Ambulance.
Michael Bay,
Abdul Mateen.
I'm glad you're bringing it. Yeah,
you know what I mean. But it needs to be all those things. It needs to be a perfect storm. It can't be just like some fucking random movie, and then you think that you have like the Midas touch. You fucking don't.
No, I agree with you. And I think what's interesting,
and it can't be for Netflix.
Like,
that's my other caveat. Sorry, it cannot be a fucking direct to streaming
theater.
No,
yeah,
it has to be a theatrical release. Yeah. That has Barbie marketing campaign money.
Someone might come to us and try to say that the whatever "See You Again" from the Fast and the Furious movie, the like song they play as a tribute, might be an exception. But I don't think that's not an epic song.
It's not an exception.
It's heavy on the falsetto. It's not an epic song.
Keep your dissertation. That is not accurate.
But I was thinking,
did
Michael
that song
Bay,
even chart? Like, no.
No. But yeah, it did. It was like a hit on the like adult contemporary side. I don't know. But
that's
Michael
not
Bay,
a Hot 100,
much,
you and I know that.
I know. But like, Michael Bay straight up had almost every one of his movies in the 90s and 2000s had a tie-in, because of course there's Aerosmith. But I remember that big Faith Hill song in Pearl Harbor that was like I think she was nominated for an Oscar for it. But like, his movies always had for a while like big hit song.
Oh no, he didn't do Con Air. Sorry, I was like, and then what's the song in Con Air?
No, How Do I Live though? That's another Leanne. Well, the story
that's
there.
Leanne Rimes.
We talked about it. I think like Trisha Yearwood had a version and Leanne Rimes had a version, and one's on the album, but like one was nominated for an Oscar. But anyway, that's another epic. Like, what a great song! Like, such a fun. I mean, anything that can go on a karaoke stage is like good. That's what we're looking for. But
they played that song because Nicolas Cage beat a man to death for yelling at his wife in a bar, and then set in motion the events of Con Air. So I'm just saying, it's very funny that that's like the epic song that comes from that movie, and that's the scene.
Oh my God,
that they put it under. It's just interesting. Men are interesting.
Men are interesting, and I just remembered the time there was a Bachelor episode where they played a cover of that song during, I think was supposed to be, it was one of the fantasy suite scenes, and it was not the original version. It was a cover by one of the producer's wives who could not sing, and it was very bad. I'm sure if someone YouTubes it, I'll try to find it on TikTok and put it on TikTok, but it was terrible. But yeah, we need epic songs.
The Bachelor loves to have like bands that you can kind of quite literally not see anywhere else or ever see again.
Generic country. It's going to be something like
you and I could fully get on that show as like a live music act.
We could use AI for good in this case, in which we create a fictional mediocre country band and we call ourselves something like Cracked Dirt Road. And that's like, oh my God.
Are you sure that's not a previous band's name though that's been on The Bachelor? Because that sounds familiar.
It's like, you know, like Kaylin C and Jason get to dance during their one-on-one to recording artist Crack Dirt Road.
In an empty airport hangar. Okay, but you were trying to make a larger point about soundtracks though, and before I got us off track.
It's not fun anymore, right? It's not fun. Like, Barbie really is the first glimpse of fun I've had in a while when it comes to a soundtrack. And then thank God for, you know, some fictional bands like Daisy Jones, which again was a miniseries, oh, yeah, not a movie, but you
yes,
know.
Yes, but the music was really, so, really
better than the miniseries,
good.
Better than the miniseries.
Way better.
Like, way better.
Yeah, you know what?
Way
I'm not better. Rewatching the miniseries, but you know what I am listening to constantly? Daisy Jones and the Six.
Listen, and as I know I've said before.
I know that Ashley Ray is on our side about this fictional band as well.
Listen, on my Spotify rap this year, you are going to see Baby Billy and you're going to see Daisy Jones and the Six.
Another.
There's going to be a lot of Bible bonkers and there will come a payday.
I was going to say, like, I don't think anybody's prepared for how good Uncle Baby Billy's fictional music career is, because it is really good.
It's so good.
Misbehaving.
Walter Goggins. Oh, my God.
I mean, to go back to HBO, like, sometimes they don't always get – they obviously don't always get it right, but they did get it right with Elder the OG, that rap, and in Misbehaving. Yeah. Like, those
and
are some
Misbehaving.
Of the best singles that I listen to unironically.
Yeah, I think HBO has been the one to really do, you know, support the concept of a good soundtrack. Like, they're really the one exception right now in most cases. And what's funny is they're Warner Brothers, which is what Barbie was the studio that brought Barbie. So, you know, whatever the conglomerate's full name is now, Time Warner, CNN, Roystar, Waco, whatever you want to. It's, you know, still okay in the soundtrack game, really the exception to the rule, but we can always do better.
Yes, I would love some better soundtracks in the future.
Do you think we'll ever see a soundtrack sell a million copies, or like have like a million, even if it's like digital copies or streams, like billions of streams or whatever?
I'd be surprised if Barbie isn't getting close to that at all.
Yeah.
You know, they also did like a vinyl release of that as well. But never say never. No idea.
Yeah,
no idea. I think it's, of course, it's possible. But we'll have to see.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts for today? Any shout outs, honorable mentions we didn't mention today that you just want to call out quickly?
I mean, you know, the Letters to Cleo owning the 10 Things I Hate About You soundtrack, like, changed
oh,
my
yeah.
life. Like, great.
Oh, yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
And bring back more fictional bands with good music. You know, release Uncle Baby Billy's, like, full album. Give
yeah.
him an LP.
Agreed.
And let Jack Antonoff write a fucking hit song for a blockbuster movie. I think that might be the key here.
Yeah, and not a kid's movie, because really
no.
the exceptions, it's
an
just
adult.
Been Trolls and Minions. I don't want to see a troll or a minion in sight.
And I don't want anyone to tell me what a minion is ever. I don't want to know.
We don't need to know. Ignorance is bliss.
Please. It's all I have left is my ignorance.
It's really all we have left. I think the only honorable mention I would say is like the OC soundtracks were really big.
Oh, sure.
When we were in Garden State. But like, you know, that was, yeah, I know. Well, like, I've been thinking about it a lot after seeing Death Cab. And
I was like, because
Service,
you saw the Postal
yeah.
Service recently.
Yeah,
that's
truly,
why you're thinking about
it's
it.
It's truly why. Yes, I too was one of the many crying millennials in the Bay Area this past week in the rain, watching Ben Gibbard sing sad songs.
Well, no, I mean, I think even in our Garden State, Manic Pixie Dream Girl talk with Kaylee from last season, we do
yeah.
talk about how good that soundtrack is. So it is a good soundtrack.
Still
and
good.
I, you know, unfortunately begrudgingly support it. I also would say the Wedding Singer soundtrack I loved. It got me into 80s music.
It's great. Yes. Same. That's like probably where I heard a lot of 80s songs for the first time. So yeah, shout out to Adam Sandler for the Wedding Singer soundtrack. Well, with that, we say thank you.
Go listen to some soundtracks. Let us know if we missed any soundtracks that you think are iconic that we didn't get to or that we didn't talk about. Or if you recently bought a vinyl of an old, quote unquote, old, as my old film teacher used to say, the 90s isn't old. It's not a classic movie. But if you have bought a classic movie soundtrack from the 90s on vinyl, or if you're like my friend Veronica, who recently bought the Wayne's World 2 soundtrack on cassette tape at a flea market.
Okay.
We want to hear about it, you know.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is you can follow us on Instagram at The Old Millennials Pod, and you can follow us there and leave us a comment if we missed any soundtracks or if you have any good soundtrack recent purchases. And Am I forgetting anything else? Oh, yes. Duh. As we beg of you every episode, please, please, please leave us 5 stars. Won't you? Won't you, won't you do the right thing and just say something nice about us? And then that can be like, you know, we're deep in Q4. You know, the year is wrapping up. There's only so much time for you to like rack up like good karma for this year. And
that's
why don't we do it by leaving these sad, lowly podcasters a 5-star review, whether you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
I've heard that. No, I mean, it's Apple and Spotify. I heard that both of them have decided that smaller podcasts can no longer get ratings lower than 4 stars. So I think you by law now, you're going to have to be forced to give us a 5-star rating.
See, legally, even Emily says it. That's how you know it's legal. With her between her girl math and part-time law degree.
And my grifter statements.
Oh, well, you'd be so happy to know that I did a coworker's birth chart at team dinner this week after a martini.
What a treat. What a treat. Truly brings people together.
Yes. Well, and now that we've officially veered into astrology, that's how you know we've got to wrap it up. So we will see you next week for a brand new episode. And make sure you're subscribed everywhere because we have a bunch of really fun guests coming up. And we would be so sad if you didn't get to hear them chat with us about various topics. So yeah, make sure you're subscribed and we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.